Hello, everybody, and welcome to this week's new episode of the Birding Life Youth Podcast. In this episode, I'm having a chat to Kathan Moore. So, welcome, Kathan. It's great to have you on.
Afternoon, Gabby. Yeah, Shane, thanks so much for reaching out. I know we've tried to do this a while ago and it just hasn't worked out yet, but I'm glad we've managed to get this right.
Yeah, definitely. It's been a long time, but you know, we're here now, so it's okay. Are you ready to dive right into it?
Yeah, no, let's go for it.
So, Kathan, you've pretty much lived in the bush your whole life as your parents manage King's Camp in the Timbavati. So, what has it been like growing up in the bush?
Sort of to paint the picture for you, my parents have managed King's Camp now for the last 30 years this year. So pretty much born and raised at King's. And honestly, there's no better place in the world to grow up in terms of, you know, just not only being exposed to the natural world and being out there in the bush, but also just meeting people from all walks of life, you know, safari goers that come to King's and just sort of understanding the world. It's a very all-around upbringing.
Awesome. Okay. So how long have they been managing it now?
Yeah, so they've been managing for 30 years. My father studied nature conservation at the old Pretoria Technicon, and King's was pretty much his first job, so it's the only job he's ever known. And my mom was an air hostess before, and got the job as the manageress there. So they met there, got married there, and had my sister there. Yeah, proper fairy tale.
Quite the love story. Okay, so Kathan, I mean, it's no secret you're very into photography. So let's talk photography now. So apart from being one of YWP's favorite photographers, with some of the most incredible images I personally have ever seen, let's take it back a step. So what actually got you into photography to start with?
Gabby, so I've always had a passion for not necessarily photography, but rather telling the stories of the animals. Because obviously growing up at King's, I grew up at the same time as the leopards and the lions. And so for me, it was always more about, you know, sharing these stories, these personal stories of these animals' lives with other people. And in the beginning, it was me writing little stories and little poems and things about it before I had access to a camera. And then by chance, a friend of mine, Albie Morkel, an ex-South African cricketer, he saw my passion for this and lent me his camera. And after a week, he saw how much it meant to me, and he actually gave me the camera. And from then, I mean, this was in grade 8, yeah, so 2016. From then, it was pretty much just an epic, epic journey from there. And I mean, I still remember my first game drive with the camera. Went out, obviously, I had no idea what I was doing with settings or anything, but it didn't matter at the point. And we had these two leopards mating on the branch in front of us. I just remember shooting and going crazy and checking the pictures. And obviously now looking back, the pictures are not the greatest.
But you know, we've all been there. We've all been there.
Yeah, it didn't matter to me, because I remember that sighting and thinking to myself, yo, this gives me such an incredible feeling. And I can see this being my tool to tell stories and to reach a much greater audience in the future.
Awesome. Yeah, I remember, like, my parents were always, I mean, very bush orientated and photography. And I mean, I was, I think, 5 weeks old the first time I went to Kruger. So, you know, it's in my DNA. And I remember we were at this wild dog den, okay? And they had all these, like, nice big lenses and everything. And the wild dog pups actually came out from the den, and they came right by the car, and they started chewing the tires. And now my parents, with these massive lenses, actually, they had too much lens, they couldn't get images, and I was there with my little snappy, happy camera, and I was shooting, and, like, you know, the same as you, like, you're just shooting around, and you're going ballistic, and you don't know what you're actually shooting at, yeah. And they're probably all blurry, but yeah, so that was me too. And I got the best shots, actually. If they may have been blurry, but my parents didn't get anything. So, you know,
that's all.
Exactly. I have the proof. there isn't a photo, it didn't happen. So, you know.
Exactly. No, I mean, it's sort of the same story with me. I mean, I remember going to driving to school, because obviously I went to school at Southern Cross in Hoed Spruit, and that was about an hour's drive in and out every morning and afternoon. And I mean, I think it's the only place in the world where I can use the excuse there was an elephant roadblock or lions on a buffalo kill, and that's why I'm late for class. But I mean, I used to go with an iPad and just go crazy and take photos of everything. And I think that's when I sort of started Instagram, was when I was taking pictures with the iPad on the way to school. And yeah, obviously growing up where I grew up, it's the most amazing place to, the most amazing opportunity to get into photography. So it all just sort of started from there.
Okay, so yeah, like you went to school in Hoed Spruit, and like you said, it was like an hour in and out. So other than, you know, elephant roadblocks, what other did you like ever experience, like any other like amazing sightings on your way to school?
I think in terms of action, I've seen wild dogs killing impalas on the road to school a couple of times, cheetah hunt before. But I think if we're talking about like all-time favorite sighting, has to be a pangolin one late afternoon after cricket on the way home. Pangolin in the middle of the road. It actually happened twice. I mean, that for me has to be the most epic. You know, people go to the bush their whole lives and they never get to see pangolins.
Yo, I'm speechless. I don't know what to say. So you say that happened to you twice?
Yeah, I saw a pangolin twice, once inside the reserve and a second time outside the reserve. And yeah, I remember it was just as the sun had set. And I know at this stage they were seeing this one pangolin a couple times. Usually happens like that in the reserve where you'll see the same pangolin maybe three or four times in like 2 weeks and then they disappear. And they had seen this guy the night before. And I just remember driving down the road and looking at this. I thought it was elephant dung at first. And then it moved to the other side of the road. And I was like, okay, cool. And
that's definitely not elephant dung.
And getting close and seeing it was a pangolin. And unfortunately, I wasn't a photographer at that stage. But yeah.
Yeah, I've seen a pangolin once in the wild. Oh, it was so cute because I think we were coming back from, I think we were going back to Sakuza, and there was this vehicle stopped in front of us, and you know, you're like, oh, it's probably like just like some flat cat lions lying down, and we're like, oh, we wonder what it is. And then this little boy from the like from the back of the car, he pops his head out through the window and he's like, it's a pangolin. And he's like whispering, pointing down on the ground. And I'm like, no way. No way. This kid is like trying to mess with us. And then this pangolin literally came out the bushes into this lovely like little plane and literally just stayed there for a few minutes, just sniffing around, you know, how they do. And yeah, so that's the time I saw a pangolin. But, you know, hopefully I can see them a few more. I mean, I've still got my whole life to live, so.
No, absolutely. Look, it's about just spending time out there. Huh? It's just, it's about luck and making sure you're out there to be lucky enough to see them.
So now, Kathan, you've, obviously, you've progressed on from your iPad and everything for your photography. So what are the gear you currently use?
Gabby, so I'm shooting with an R7 at the moment and a 300mm 2.8, obviously using the RF to EF adapter. And I have a 70-200, which I sometimes then put onto the R7, but I also shoot with my old buddy's a 7D Mark II. So that's the sort of the 70-200 with the 7D and the 300mm with the R7 is sort of my go-to combination at the moment. My first lens that I bought myself was the 150-600 Sigma, and that's probably about 8 years ago now. So I've sort of, I feel like I've outgrown it a little bit. It's quite old, but also it's nice to have it there for bird photography in case I need to just get that in.
Yeah, okay. Well, I'm fortunate enough to use an R6 on occasion, so... Yeah, I mean, the mirrorless, would you say is the way to go? Or like, what is your opinion on the old DSLR compared to the mirrorless? Like, obviously you're going with the times, but what would you suggest to other photographers that are still DSLR? Would you like recommend them to move over? Or yeah, what's your opinion on this?
Put it this way, I think, because obviously mirrorless is still quite new, but it is getting more established now in the industry. I would say maybe 3 years ago when mirrorless was just showing up on the scene, I think if you were, you know, you were comfortable with your DSLR, I think I would have advised to stick with DSLR. But I mean, the way mirrorless is going now, the new technology is absolutely incredible. So if you are new to photography or if you're coming into photography, I definitely think you got to get onto the mirrorless train, just because realistically that is the future. And so I think if you know, familiarize yourself with the mirrorless cameras, you're putting yourself in good stead for the future.
Okay, so now on the topic of cameras and everything, what has been your most memorable sighting that you've documented through your photography?
I think I would have to say White Lions of the Timavati. I'm sure you've heard of the White Lions of the Timavati. The Birmingham Pride, they currently have 3 White Lions in the Pride, and their young males also just left the Pride, so he came and spent quite a bit of time around King's Camp. And just, you know, it's sort of flagship species, flagship individuals like that, that make it so enjoyable. Because, you know, linking it back to my storytelling, you know, every lion is, obviously every lion is different, but every lion's a lion, whereas a white lion is completely different. Another animal that sticks, that comes to mind is a 3-legged elephant that moves around the Timavati. And her story is she stood on a landmine in Mozambique and she lost her right back leg. And so she walked all the way from Mozambique across Kruger into the Timavati and spent a lot of time in the reserve. And I mean, sort of, that sort of sighting and telling that story for me is very emotive. So sort of those sort of things that that stand out to me.
Yeah, I've actually had the privilege of seeing her on a visit to the Timavati, and it's just amazing how, you know, the animals adapt and how she like can still feed. And did she have a calf, or am I mistaken?
She could have. When I saw her, I thought she was pregnant, but she didn't have a calf. So it's possible she had a calf, yes.
Okay, because I remember we also thought she was pregnant and stuff, but yeah, I haven't been since then, so just wanted to find out.
Yeah, and I mean, obviously, things like, you know, every guest comes on safari, and you're like, what do you want to see? And they're like, a hunt. So I haven't been that lucky, considering how much time I've spent out there. I've never seen a leopard kill. I've seen a couple wild dog kills, and then I saw my first lion kill last year where 4 male lions killed a buffalo in front of the camp. But for me, the most epic experience was on the plains of the Masai Mara and watching this coalition of cheetah. They were known as the Tanobora, the Fast Five. Them pulling down a wildebeest on the plains of the Masai Mara in front of me was incredible.
Wait, so you've never seen a leopard kill in the Timavati?
I haven't, no, unfortunately. And I mean, I've sat with leopards hunting countless hours, leopards and lions. Only ever seen one cat kill. It's a curse. And I mean, like when I'm in a sighting and I see a lion start hunting, I'm like, guys, I'm going to leave just because I know if I'm here, you're not going to get to see it. So one day my life will change. But for now, I'm not.
Oh, wow. Okay. Well, yeah, we've had a leopard actually kill from under our car. So... You need to catch up, Kaden.
Yeah, I know who to call now.
Okay, awesome. So, sticking with photography now, you are in your final year of studying something to do with photography. So, what is that degree exactly? And how do you intend utilizing this degree when you're done?
I'm studying a degree in commercial photography and visual communication. So pretty much it's more the corporate side of photography and the products. So we work in the studios, and our genres are like products and portraits, landscapes, architecture, interior, that sort of thing. So it's a lot different to wildlife. But for me, look, when I'm done, I don't intend being a commercial photographer in a studio somewhere in a city, because that's not me. But it's more about, you know, the understanding, the theory behind photography. So I'm studying this to solidify my theory and to be competent behind the camera. And if I could pick up any camera, you know what you're doing. I think if you know how to handle your camera, you are 75% of the way there to taking a good photograph. And I mean, it's also what's nice about this degree is it gears you for entering the business world. So for instance, one our modules is called professional practice, and that sort of entails, you know, writing marketing plans for yourself as a photographer, reaching out to industry professionals, doing, you know, industry internships. So it also teaches you photography, but it also gears you, which most universities don't do. They don't gear you for leaving university and, you know, next year finding a job. Where this, you know, once you finish your degree, you've pretty much got one foot in the door to get a job as soon as you're done, which is quite nice about this. But obviously my plans are to get back into the bush.
Okay, awesome. So just quickly, your advice on something. So if you are like an avid nature lover and photographer and you want to go and study something to do with photography, would you recommend your degree that you're currently studying? Or I don't know, what's your thoughts?
Look, if you are a nature. We often have this debate in class whether photography is, you could teach yourself for photography, right? But you could also go to an institution and learn photography. And we often talk about what makes the two people different. And we usually come to the conclusion that the person that studies photography will become competent and confident in what they're doing a lot quicker than, you know, somebody that's self-teaching them. So say we take a new technique, I'll learn that technique today, and within a week studying and practicing in the studio, I'll be confident in it. Whereas if you're self-taught, you know, it takes you a lot longer to get comfortable with the certain technique. So if you are a wild, I mean, I recommend it for all photographers just because it gives you such a great understanding of photography as a whole. I would recommend it. But if you're looking at just being a wildlife photographer and you've got time on your hands, it's not a necessity, but I would recommend it. I think it's important.
Okay, cool. Thanks for that insight. So now staying on the topic of studying, and I think I know the answer to this one, but when you're not studying, where do you go on the holidays if you're in the bush every day anyway?
It's straight back home. Eh? Yeah, whether I have to leave at the crack of dawn, middle of the night, as soon as I get my chance, I'm on that N1 past Polokwane back down to its freight and then back to King's. Because obviously my future revolves around, you know, having a good social media account, being out there, having a presence. And to do that, I need to have a certain amount of acceptable content of a high enough standard for me to publish. So I need to spend as much time out there as possible stockpiling. I mean, there's places around, you know, Pretoria like Rietvlei and Dinner King, but having grown up at King's, you know, it just doesn't feel the same. And also, because of going back to that whole storytelling thing, I don't know these animals. I say if I go to Dinner King, it's a leopard. I don't really, or not leopard, I don't really get there, but it's a lion. I don't really know this lion. So in terms of my passion and photographing it, it sort of changes a bit. So for me, it's always just get home as much as I can. And unfortunately, it doesn't happen as much as I'd like it to. But look, I'm in my last year of studies, so I'm almost there. It's doable.
Okay, cool. Then just quickly, so you're on the topic of content creation now. So I often have this discussion with other photographers who are also like big on their Instagrams, and I mean, you being one of, I think, like, you have a really big Instagram with a really big following, and you know, you also have to push that content creation. But how do you kind of have the balance of, you know, pushing for the content but also being present in the bush and like really experiencing the moment? Because that's something that I have a few ambassadorships and stuff. And that's something that I also sometimes have an issue with. Like, how do you stop and just be present?
Yeah, that's a very, very good question. And unfortunately, I think it's a lot of people, they miss it. I often see it like, say someone comes down to the bush with me and they say we've got 3 days there and they're just going crazy with the camera and we leave and they're like, sure, it's just, you know, it's just gone straight by me. So, I mean, I've tried and make myself aware of it and be conscious about getting too carried away. And I mean, I do sort of things that, like, for instance, if I'm sitting with a lion and a lion is roaring, and if I get my first video of that first roar, then I'll switch my camera off and I won't video any other roars, just because it becomes very easy to video every roar hoping something different happens. But it's important to switch off, and you know, if something does happen the next roar, so be it. That's nature. But you are right, it's important to be able to switch off and just also to appreciate what you are seeing.
Exactly. Yeah, because, you know, when you're there, and especially to like those who don't have like the opportunity to go to the bush that often. I mean, like a 1 year trip, like once a year trip to Kruger, and you're like, oh, I have this Instagram page, I really want to grow it. Like, I need to push the content. But then exactly, like when you get home, you're like, wow, that flew by so fast and I didn't actually take anything in. So I think, yeah, it's really important to have that balance, because, you know, we can't forget where the passion started. And but thank you.
No, it's a good point. And I think I've definitely noticed it more now that I've moved away from King's. You know, when you're living there, you sort of get into a routine and you could easily start taking things for granted because it's, you know, it's home, it's your everyday lifestyle. But now that I'm away, I start craving the bush, and when I do get back to the bush, you appreciate it so much more, and then you realize the importance of just being able to, you know, switch off and take it in.
Yeah, so Kathryn, you obviously have a Fugasa qualification. So when you get home, do you jump into guiding, or do you just go out alone?
So it's a bit of both. So I've got my Fugasa level 1, and I am currently studying to write my level 2 theory. But obviously, you need two or three years of experience before you can do your assessment. But yeah, so I will, when I go home, it's mostly in my own landy out there by myself doing my thing. And then if any of the neighboring lodges require freelance work, Kings or say Rockfig or Eagle Isle, our neighbors, they then will contact me and say, look, we've got a last minute booking. This is what we need. And then I'll say, if I'm up for it, if I'm free, I'll say, cool, get me in there. Because I've got a passion for taking people into the bush. I mean, watching somebody smile the first time they see a lion, or, you know, when the lion roars for the first time, and you hear the person in the back go, my God, it's amazing. Yeah. It's just so fun to get out there and to give people that experience. So I love it. But I do try balance because obviously when I'm guiding, I don't photograph and I don't video, because my guests are my main priority. So I've got to make sure that I balance it, that I do get out by myself enough as well to be able to get my content.
That's fantastic. Okay, well, quite interesting. Okay, so toward the end of last year, Luca and I actually had the privilege of visiting an underground photographic hide around the same time, I think, that King's Warren was being built or had just opened. And, you know, we really hope to visit the King's Warren someday. But tell us what you've seen and one of your, like, most memorable experiences at the Warren. I'm keen to hear.
You know, I think for a photographer, a wildlife photographer, an underground hide is like a dream. Eh? And I mean, for us, we've been looking at it and thinking how we can do it for the last maybe 4 or 5 years. And when we finally got the go-ahead from the owners, it was, I can't just remember how excited I was. I was smiling from ear to ear. If I think of sighting-wise, we've pretty much had it all so far. We've had leopards, always elephants every day. We've had nice big herds of buff. But I think, you know, highlight sightings, a herd of maybe 300 buffalo piling into the small little waterhole at night. And, you know, the dust, because we've got really nice backlights as well. So if you turn off the front spotlights, you get this backlight with the silhouettes and the moody dust moving in the wind. So that buffalo sighting, having wild dogs chase impalas past the hide and then coming to drink at the hide. And of course, a big male lion drinking right in front of us, looking into the lens as he's drinking. I mean, that's just, you know, every photographer's dream.
You can't get better than that.
No, not at all.
Okay, well, I'm very jealous now. when we were at the hide, we had this massive elephant bull like sneak up on us, because he came like next to the hide and we couldn't really see him, and then like he was there and then he was chilling and we're like, okay, we're just gonna get quiet, and then he took a trunk full of water and he splashed us all. Oh, awesome. My camera got soaking, my computer got soaking. And now we're just sitting here.
Those are the memories you live for.
Exactly. And my mom had a white t-shirt on. And now it's like stained. It's covered with mud. So,
yeah. I wouldn't wash it. I'd frame it and put it up in the house with the date.
She probably didn't. I don't know. I'll have to ask her. Okay. So a couple of years ago, you won the Benjamin Nkapa Award for Youth Photography with the most incredible wildebeest shot. But what was that experience like, not only winning, but also the experience of receiving the award in Kenya?
Gabby, it was incredible. Sort of personal side, I had obviously studied my first year at Tux. I was doing a BSc in physical science, and it was COVID, and I was in my res room, and I was online lectures, and it was just absolutely horrible. It was just not an enjoyable time. It was, you know, being a bush boy, being outside, coming to have to like be in your small res room and do science and math all day every day. It wasn't working for me. And towards the end of the year, I decided that it's not for me. And that's when I discovered the degree in photography. So I pulled out, and I remember feeling really upset with myself, because obviously you feel like you've now wasted a year of your life and everything. And I remember that's when I got the news that I'd won this competition. So on a personal side, it was incredible for my self-esteem, and it made me feel really good. And that sort of award made me realize that I could take photography seriously, and it was a feasible option for my future. So, I mean, obviously I hadn't, also another thing, I've traveled more around, you know, Europe. I've never traveled to, at that point, I had never traveled to another African country. So flying to Kenya and in Nairobi, new city, new country, I was so excited. And then, you know, going to the museum and meeting the president of Kenya and the, you know, the Minister of Wildlife and Tourism, and speaking in front of that audience, it was an incredibly empowering experience, I must say, and gave me a lot of confidence in myself and my photographic capabilities going forward.
That's so good. And like also for your mental health, you know, being a bush boy, like you said, being a bush boy and then going into like this little city and then in this little room just doing math. I can't think of anything worse, just doing math. Science, not so much, but math.
No, it seriously took its toll on me. So that award came at the right time.
Yeah, okay. And then you obviously went to Kenya, and you, if I'm not mistaken, you went and visited like the Masai Mara, and you had quite an incredible time. So do you have any highlights from that?
Yeah, look, the Masai Mara is an incredible place. So like I said, one day we saw two cheetah kills. We saw those Tanabora kill the wildebeest. We saw a mother cheetah pull down an impala. Saw hyenas pull down a gazelle. It was just, it's predator's paradise, you know, and from a photographic point of view, it's exceptional. You can't really get better because obviously it's wide open spaces, very few bushes. If you're shooting from low, you know, you get incredible depth of field, grasslands, epic landscapes. So that sense, it was amazing. But I think from sort of an ethical and, you know, overall guest experience, it was quite an eye opener, obviously coming from South Africa, where, you know, most of your reserves, you've got a 2 or 3 vehicle limit in sightings, you know, only off-road on the same track, you can't off-road on sensitive soils. And in Kenya, it was just a free-for-all. In one sighting, we had maybe 30 vehicles. And when you come from, all surrounded this cheetah. So when you come from the Sabi Sands or Thimavati, and you know that's what you're used to, 2 or 3 vehicles, to this, it's crazy. So in that sense, it was quite an eye-opener, where I think South Africa is quite a way ahead in terms of, you know, ethical experience. But like I said, predator wise landscape, scenery, it's very, very hard to beat.
Okay, well, I actually didn't think of it like that. Like, I've always known that, you know, there's a lot of vehicles at sightings, but like you experiencing it firsthand, yeah, it's an eye-opener, and, you know, it makes us more grateful, like, that we have and are blessed with, like, the Thimavati, where it is, like you said, only, like, 3 vehicles per sighting, so, yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, in terms of things like, also just, you know, in South Africa, there's Fugasa, so to be a guide, you have to be Fugasa accredited, and you get your levels, whereas in Kenya, there's not really a standard that the guide has to be. So our guide, Shave, he was an amazing guy, and he just wanted me to get the photos, but he didn't really have the biggest knowledge about the bush. So that sort of sense as well. I mean, if you're a first-time safari goer, it doesn't really matter much, because obviously me and my dad, having grown up in the bush, we sort of know when the guide's not 100% sure what he's telling us. But it's definitely an interesting experience, yeah.
Awesome. So, Kathryn, we're running out of time now, but I have to ask you about your infamous footage of a certain hyena, aptly named Two-Wheel Drive. So tell our listeners a bit more about this incredible guy, from the first time you documented him, her, to the latest footage, I believe, of him, her, I'm not exactly sure, miraculously walking. So tell us more about the story.
Yeah, it was, I mean, for a couple of months I heard that there was this hyena walking around on 2 legs. And I was like, there's no way. And I mean, like, dragging its legs? No. Balancing and walking on 2 legs. And everyone kept on seeing this hyena and telling me, and I just, you know, don't believe it. Until one day, driving back to camp, it's about 10 o'clock in the morning, it's hot, it's middle January, so temperature's already like 35 degrees, coming around the corner, and just checking this hyena cruising down the road on two legs. And I mean, I was shocked. Grabbed my phone out, took a video, and cool, that was that. And I didn't think it in posting it. And looking back now, I don't understand why I didn't think I should have posted it. But I kept that footage for, I think, about 2 months, and I didn't post it anywhere. And one day I ran out of content, and I thought, okay, I have to post this now. So I posted it, and it just went absolutely viral. It got, I think, 12 million views, that first video I posted of him. And a lot of comments, good and bad. Look, I had some horrible comments, people telling me that I'm, you know, scum of the earth, and that, because they don't obviously understand, and they expected me to, I don't know, pick the hyena up and like take it back to camp or something. But, you know, in these reserves, the policy is if it's a natural incident, where in this case he was assumed to have been attacked by lions, then you've got to let nature take its course. Of course, if the animal stuck in a snare or something, completely different story, then you step in. But I mean, it's your responsibility to let things play out. I saw this hyena for majority of 2022. I got about 90 million views on videos from posting him, which was incredible, and that sort of, you know, launched my social media accounts. And then unfortunately at the end of 2022, I saw him for the last time. He was in amazing condition. He was also traveling a lot, much greater distances than we had seen. And he also started to use his back legs a bit after a whole year, which was incredible. Because, I mean, if you look at, I was looking at my comments earlier, a lady was referring some sort of condition where after spinal trauma and injury, you can actually start getting a bit of movement back. And I mean, it's just, if someone, I would have loved to have had a proper study done on this hyena. We just didn't have the time, unfortunately. But he did start moving his legs a little bit, but still cruised around on two legs. But I saw him for about a year, obviously developed a really special connection with him. And then he just sadly disappeared one day. But I mean, incredibly grateful for my experience and opportunity to document him. I ended up on Fox News for that because of the hyena. They found me through Fox. Fox News found me through the hyena. I won a couple of competitions with videos of that hyena. So another epic story for my photographic journey.
Definitely. Well, fingers crossed. Let's hope, you know, two-wheel drive shows himself sometime.
He's out there somewhere being a complete badass.
So I know I said we're running out of time, but I have just one final question for you. So what advice can you give me as a pretty much amateur wildlife photographer? Like, if you could give me one word of advice, what would it be?
I would say patience. It's very easy. It's very easy in the bush to get overwhelmed. You know, if something happens and you're not getting the shots, or you get somewhere and a leopard is just passed out in a tree, patience. You know, everything comes down to patience. The bush is unpredictable. And if you just put yourself in the right place enough of the time, eventually your hard work will pay off. And just not to get upset that you're not getting the shots you want, because it will happen. Believe me, it will happen. You just got to be patient and understand that, you know, nothing's scripted in the bush.
Well, thank you so much for that amazing advice. I know I'm not the most patient person, so I'm definitely take that into account, and I'll try to be more patient from now on. But Kathan, thank you so much. It's really been a chat for the books, and we can talk for hours, so we're probably gonna have to get you back on the podcast so we can talk a little more, and hopefully by that stage two-wheel drive will be back into the picture. So
yes, of course.
Yeah, okay. Well, thank you so much. And yeah, good luck on all your endeavors and this final year of studying for you. And I can't wait to see what the future holds.
Awesome. Thanks, Gabby. Yeah, thanks for reaching out and giving me the opportunity to jump on here and have a chat with you.
Okay, everyone. Well, I hope you all enjoyed this podcast and learned something new. And I look forward to recording my next podcast really soon. This is Gabby Sikora for the Birding Life Youth Podcast, signing out.